Gulliver's Travels, Part 1, Chapter 4. Mildendo, the metropolis of Lilliput, described, together with the Emperor's Palace, a conversation between the author and a principal secretary concerning the affairs of that empire, the author's offers to serve the Emperor in his wars. The first request I made, after I had obtained my liberty, was that I might have license to see Mildendo, the metropolis, which the Emperor easily granted me, but with a special charge to do no hurt either to the inhabitants or their houses. The people had notice, by proclamation, of my design to visit the town. The wall which encompassed it is 2.5 feet high, and at least 11 inches broad, so that a coach and horse may be driven safely around it, and it is flanked with strong towers at 10 feet distance. I stepped over the great western gate, and passed very gently and sliding through the two principal streets, only in my short waistcoat, for fear of damaging the roofs and eaves of the houses with the skirts of my coat. I walked with the utmost circumspection to avoid treading on any stragglers who might remain in the streets, although the orders were very strict that all people should keep in their houses at their own peril. The garret windows and tops of houses were so crowded with spectators that I thought in all my travels I had not seen a more populous place. The city is an exact square, each side of the wall being 500 feet long. The two great streets which run across and divide it into four quarters are 5 feet wide. The lanes and alleys, which I could not enter, but only view them as I passed, are from 12 to 18 inches. The town is capable of holding 500,000 souls. The houses are from 3 to 5 stories, the shops and markets well provided. The Emperor's Palace is in the center of the city, where the two great streets meet. It is enclosed by a wall of 2 feet high and 20 feet distance from the buildings. I had His Majesty's permission to step over this wall, and the space being so wide between that and the palace, I could easily view it on every side. The outward court is a square of 40 feet, and includes two other courts. The inmost are the royal apartments, which I was very desirous to see, and found it extremely difficult, for the great gates, from one square into another, were but 18 inches high and 7 inches wide. Now the buildings of the outer court were at least 5 feet high, and it was impossible for me to stride over them without infinite damage to the pile. Though the walls were strongly built of hewn stone and 4 inches thick, at the same time the Emperor had a great desire that I should see the magnificence of his palace, but this I was not able to do till 3 days after, which I spent cutting down with my knife some of the largest trees in the royal park, about 100 yards distant from the city. Of these trees I made 2 stools, each about 3 feet high and strong enough to bear my weight. The people having received a notice a second time, I went again through the city to the palace, with my 2 stools in my hands. When I came to the side of the outer court, I stood upon 1 stool and took the other in my hand. This I lifted over the roof, and gently set it down on the space between the first and second court, which was 8 feet wide. Then I stepped over the building very inconveniently from 1 stool to the other. I drew up the first after me with a hook sticked. By this contrivance I got into the inmost court, and lying down upon my side, I applied my face to the windows of the middle stories, which were left open on purpose, and discovered the most splendid apartments that can be imagined. There I saw the Empress and the young princes in their several lodgings, with their chief attendants about them. Her Imperial Majesty was pleased to smile very graciously upon me, and gave me out of the window her hand to kiss. But I shall not anticipate the reader with further descriptions of this kind, because I reserve them for a greater work, which is now almost ready for the press, containing a general description of this empire from its first erection through a long series of princes, with a particular account of their wars and politics, laws, learning, and religion. Their plants and animals, their peculiar manners and customs, with other matters very curious and useful. My chief design at present being only to relate such events and transactions as happened to the public or to myself during a residence about 9 months in that empire. One morning, about a fortnight after I had obtained my liberty, Rodressel, principal secretary, as they style him, for private affairs, came to my house attended only by 1 servant. He ordered his coach to wait at a distance, and desired I would give him an hour's audience, which I readily consented to, on the account of his quality and personal merits, as well as many of the good offices he had done me in my solicitations at court. I offered to lie down, that he might the more conveniently reach my ear, but he chose to rather let me hold him in my hand during our conversation. He began with compliments on my liberty, said he might pretend to be some merit in it. But, however, he added, that it had not been for the present situation of things at court, perhaps I might have not obtained it so soon, for, said he, as flourishing a condition as we may appear to be to foreigners, we labour under 2 mighty evils, a violent faction at home, and the danger of an invasion by a most potent enemy from abroad. As to the first, you are to understand that for about 70 moons past there have been 2 struggling parties in this empire, under the names of Tramixen and Slemixen. from the high and low heels of their shoes by which they distinguish themselves. It is alleged, indeed, that the high heels are most agreeable to our ancient constitution. But, however this be, His Majesty has determined to make only use of the low heels in the administration of the government, and all offices in the gift of the crown. As you cannot but observe, a particularity that His Majesty's imperial heels are lower, at least by a dru, or that any action of his court. Dru is a measure of about 14th part of an inch. The animosities between these two parties run so high that they will neither eat, nor drink, nor talk with each other. We compute that the tremexen, or high heels, to exceed us in number, but the power is wholly on our side. We apprehend His Imperial Highness, the heir to the crown, to have some tendency towards the high heels. At least we can plainly discover that one of his heels is higher than the other, which gives him a hobble in his gait. Now, in the midst of these intestine disquiets, we are threatened with an invasion from the island of Blefuscu, which is the other great empire of the universe, almost as large and powerful as this of His Majesty. For as to what we have heard from you affirm, that there are other kingdoms and states in the world inhabited by human creatures as large as yourself, our philosophers are much in doubt, and would rather conjecture that you drop from the moon, or one of the stars, because it is certain that 100 mortars of your bulk would in a short time destroy all the fruits and cattle of His Majesty's dominions. Besides, all histories of 6,000 moons make no mention of you or any other regions than the two great empires of Lilliput and Blefuscu, which two mighty powers have, as I was going to tell you, been engaged in an almost obstinate war for 36 moons past. It began upon the following occasion. It is allowed on all hands that the primitive way of breaking eggs, before we eat them, was upon the larger end. But His present Majesty's grandfather, while he was a boy, going to go eat an egg, and breaking it according to the ancient practice, happened to cut one of his fingers. Whereupon the emperor, his father, published an edict, commanding all his subjects, upon great penalties, to break the smaller end of their eggs. The people so highly resented this law that our histories tell us there have been 6 rebellions raised on that account, wherein one emperor lost his life, and another his crown. These civil commotions were constantly fomented by the monarchs of Blefuscu, and when they were quelled, the exiles always fled for refuge to that empire. It is computed that 11,000 persons have at several times suffered death, rather than submit to break their eggs at the smaller end. Many 100 large volumes have been published upon this controversy, but the books of the Bigendians have long been forbidden, and the whole party rendered incapable by law of holding employments. During the course of these troubles, the emperors of Blefuscu did frequently expostulate by their ambassadors, accusing us of making a schism in religion by offending against the fundamental doctrine of our great prophet, Lustrog. In the 54th chapter of the Blundenkral, which is their Alcoran, this, however, is thought to be a mere strain upon the text, for the words are these, that all true believers break their eggs at the convenient end. And which is the convenient end seems, in my humble opinion, to be left to every man's conscience, or at least in the power of the chief magistrate to determine. Now the big Indian exiles have found so much credit in the emperor of Blefuscu's court, and so much private assistance and encouragement from their party here at home, that a bloody war has been carried on between the two empires for 36 moons with various success, during which time we have lost 40 capital ships and a much greater number of smaller vessels, together with 30,000 of our best seamen and soldiers. And the damage received by the enemy is reckoned to be somewhat greater than ours. However, they now have equipped a numerous fleet and are just preparing to make a descent upon us. And His Imperial Majesty, placing great confidence in your valor and strength, has commanded me to lay this account of his affairs before you. I desired the secretary to present my humble duty to the emperor and let him know that I thought it would not become me, who was a foreigner, to interfere with the parties, but I was ready, with the hazard of my life, to defend his person and state against all invaders. End of chapter 4. Read by David Russell. For Lit2Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.